Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michael Gross. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Matthew Fogarty. This is yet another forklift and rock case. In this case, the summary judgment record made it clear that the employer had discharged its obligation, met its obligation to provide a safe workplace. It had provided a safe workplace in that Mr. Armstrong testified that this was an ordinary construction site, nothing unusual about it. Terrain was rough in places, but there was nothing out of the ordinary in that. The equipment was safe. Mr. Myers testified that the forklift was functioning properly at the time of the accident. Mr. Armstrong testified that the only appropriate method of moving the rock from one place to another on the construction site was by forklift. When he was asked about alternative means, such as boom or crane, he said, no, those wouldn't work. Forklift was the only appropriate way. The employer had a duty to warn of any risk that it was reasonable to think that an employee wouldn't foresee. Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Myers both testified that common sense would tell you don't have somebody under the forklifts, and of course common sense would tell you don't lower the forks when there is somebody standing underneath the forklift. There were sufficient and suitable employees. There were two employees. There's no indication, no evidence that more were required, and the company had a rule that forklifts could only be operated by trained employees. And Mr. Myers testified that he had worked with this forklift at least 10 times in the past for this company, and that he had grown up operating forklifts on a farm. And Mr. Armstrong testified that what it took to be trained to operate this forklift was a day or two on the job.
There was evidence that they had never moved rock before, is that right?
My recollection, the only thing I recall from the record presently about that issue is Mr. Armstrong, the site supervisor, testifying that this job that they were assigned to do was a common job on the construction site, as common as somebody walking past your office. So it sounds like more than an everyday occurrence to do the equivalent of moving these rocks. That's the only thing I recall from the summary judgment record. And finally, rules for safe conduct. The rule that is in the record is the company's rule that only trained individuals could operate forklifts, and that rule was complied with. The notion that you don't operate, that you don't have somebody walk under the forklift, that's common sense. Mr. Armstrong testified to that. Mr. Myers testified to that and testified that he knew that was the company's position. It's common sense. And the notion that you don't push the button to lower the forks when somebody is on you, that's got to be common sense also. You don't have to have a published rule to tell an operator of a motor vehicle, step on the gas pedal if you want to go, want to move it, step on the brake if you want to stop it. Don't move it forward when somebody's standing in front of you. Don't lower the forks when somebody's standing underneath them. So in this case, the record is entirely sufficient for finding that the employer had discharged its duty to provide a safe workplace. And what happened is a pristine illustration of what this court identified in Peters and Parr as actionable co-employee negligence. This was Mr. Myers and Mr. Fogarty started off doing this work with the equipment that they were provided in a perfectly safe way. This wasn't the first day that they were moving rocks. This was the day that Mr. Myers changed the method of moving rocks so that he could make it move along a little bit faster. Before that, they were doing the operation perfectly safely, and when Mr. Armstrong, the site supervisor, observed their work, there was nobody walking underneath the forks. The work was being done appropriately with the forklift, with straps, moving the rocks from place to place. And what happened is what this court said in Peters and Parr is actionable against the co-employee. What happened is that Mr. Myers decided, I'm not satisfied with doing it in that safe way. I'm going to speed things up, and got himself into a situation where he then said to Mr. Fogarty, I need you to stand up there and steady the load, which meant standing within arm's length of the rock in order to keep it steady. There isn't any other way that the record could suggest or common sense could suggest for Mr. Fogarty to steady the load for Mr. Myers, which put him underneath the fork. And then Mr. Myers went haywire, did whatever he did because he said the machine was operating properly. And he caused the fork to come down, not once, but repeatedly, hammering Mr. Fogarty to his knees and into the ground. So Judge Wilson said that the test here, and I couldn't agree more, that the ultimate question under Peters and Parr, if they're going to be the analytical method going forward, is where does the employer's duty end and the co-employee's duty begin, or was the negligence that the duty that the co-employee failed to fulfill subsumed within the general duty, the non-delegable duty of the employer to provide a safe workplace? Well, this employer provided a safe workplace. There was nothing that this employer could or should have done to foresee and take further preventative measures toward. Seeing that somebody was going to violate the common sense proposition that you don't put somebody else in front of the vehicle and under the forks while you're operating it, that's not foreseeable. That's common sense, as Mr. Armstrong testified. And foreseeing that the operator who is trained, in fact and by rule, foreseeing that he's going to forsake the training and do something that makes the forks come down over and over again on the co-employee who is standing underneath the forks, that's not something that you foresee either. This was a case of the co-employee, Mr. Myers, going rogue, leaving the safe operation that the employer had provided for, and doing something that was negligent and created risk that resulted in Mr. Fogarty's injury. Judge Wilson and Judge Fisher, in their concurrences in Peters and Parr, seemed to be endorsing this course latest iterations of the something more test, under which the co-employee negligence would be actionable if it was an affirmative act that subjected a co-employee to risk beyond that normally associated with his job in that workplace. And that test also would be met by the facts in this case for summary judgment purposes. The record, of course, is viewed in the light most favorable to Mr. Fogarty, who was the party against whom judgment was entered. And under that record, this is not a risk that would ordinarily be attendant to Mr. Fogarty's work on that construction site. He wouldn't ordinarily be told walk in front of the forklift underneath the fork, and he wouldn't ordinarily be subjected to whatever it was that Mr. Myers did that caused the forks to come down repeatedly in a forklift that was functioning properly on its own. So in this case, the employer discharged its responsibility to provide a safe workplace. The co-employee, in carrying out the details of the work he was assigned to do, breached his responsibility to take reasonable measures to avoid foreseeable injury to a co-employee, and that's how Mr. Fogarty got hurt. This court said in Peters and again in Parr that the employer is not the insurer of its employees' safety. And the test is, as I've said, and more importantly, as the court said in Peters and Parr, is did the employer discharge its responsibility, and then did a co-employee do something that that violated his own independent duty of care toward a co-employee? And that's exactly what happened in this case.
Mr. Gross, I asked the attorney in the previous case to comment on Fogarty, and so I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, to comment on the previous case, Evans. I realize a little different facts, but albeit it was forklift operator case two. Do you agree with the Southern District's decision in Evans?
I'd like to respond in two ways. The direct response is, I disagree with the decision in Evans. I think that Judge Scott's opinion was incorrect in treating this court's opinion in Taylor as still a viable rule under the Peters and Parr paradigm for analyzing these cases. That was a turn in the road or an extension of the something more test that this court in Peters and Parr, I think, criticized and properly so. There must be times under the Peters and Parr analytical method, there must be times when somebody operating a vehicle or operating equipment can be negligent even after the employer has discharged its responsibility to provide a safe workplace, and be negligent in carrying out the details of the work. So I think that the Southern District opinion is incorrect in both cases. Should result in the cases being returned to the circuit court for trial. But even if the Southern District opinion is correct, this case is factually distinguishable. I don't think that should be the basis of decision. But this case is distinguishable because this wasn't merely operating the negligent operation of the forklift. This was deciding to put a co-employee underneath the forks and then lowering the forks repeatedly so that they cause the injury. So either way, and under the Peters and Parr test, or even under the test as it was articulated, the something more test as it was articulated in Burns versus Smith, the plaintiff in my case should prevail. I appreciate the court's attention.
Thank you. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Kathleen Hamilton. I represent the respondent, Larry Meyer. It is our position that given the facts of this particular case, that the employer had not met its non-delegable duty to provide a safe method of work. Grouped within that would be the facts that the employer, in particular the supervisor, Mr. Armstrong, provide absolutely no direction to the two employees as to how to move the stones and also as to how to construct the fountain. Contrary to what was referenced earlier, none of the three employees had ever built a stone fountain or had ever moved these particular types of stones with a forklift. You can see reference to that in the legal file on page 117 and 136. With regards to the case law that exists even under Peters and Parr, and if we go back to the common law, the employer has the non-delegable duty to set forth a safe method of work. It is our position that that was not done here. The cases where you do have transitory risks and issues where an employee has an independent duty that has been breached separate and apart from the employer involve cases where there has been a standard safe method of work in place and then the co-employee does something to deviate from that standard. That is not what occurred here. What occurred here is the employer gave the two workers a set of blueprints, said go build the fountain, and provided no specific method as to how that was to be done.
They had been moving the stones for a week before this accident occurred, and Mr. Armstrong had observed their method of moving the stone. And so is there any indication that the method of using the straps to move the stone in and of itself was what caused the injury, or, as opposed to deciding to move two stones at once?
Yes. Well, the allegations themselves actually raise that as one of the claims of error, that in directing the plaintiff to strap one stone with one strap at the time, that was an actual act of the negligence that then is being imputed to Mr. Myers. With regards to Mr. Armstrong, his actual testimony is he did not see them actually in the transport of the stones. What he did say that he saw was straps hanging from the forklift. So in trying to imply that maybe his observance of the forklift with the strap somehow sets forth the employer's non-delegable duty to sanction that as being the safe method of work, I don't think we have that here.
But I think opposing counsel's argument would be they'd been using a method which was safe, no one had been injured. They switched to a method which required one of the employees to stand underneath the fork and have a rock strap with only one strap instead of two. That was not something that was part of their training. That was not something that was part of the methods of work given by the employer. That was a choice by the employee to speed up the work. Why isn't a jury question created by that as to whether the employee's acts created the risk that were negligent and created a risk that caused the injury.
Sure. I agree that has been the argument that's been presented. With regards to the manner of moving the stones, they actually had several methods that they put into place. First, they used two straps with one stone and carried it. Then they switched it up and had two stones that were bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. And then at this particular time, they were using the one stone with the one strap. The reason why I do not believe this is a causation issue is because of the case law that concerns Kelso and even the common law that goes back further with regards to the fact that you still have the non-delegable duty of the employer that needs to be met. Here, and we know from Kelso, if the non-delegable duties are not met, and the injury or mechanism.
And what's the non-delegable duty here?
We would say that the non-delegable duty in this particular case is not setting forth a safe method of work. Therefore, without having an actual safe method of work in place, there was nothing from which Mr. Meyer could deviate. So when you just send two employees out there providing no instruction for the safe method of work, I think that creates an odd dynamic where the employer can somehow then escape even implementing any part of his non-delegable duty to the employees and having the employees be liable for any actions that they make or change during
the
course
of the work. Well, the employer is liable without regard to negligence. The question of whether the question is whether the co-employee is negligent.
Correct. And I think it all comes back to duty. And again, I think our facts in our particular case are unique and different in that this is not a case where there was a set method that had been established that then was deviated by any of these employees. The other thing I think that is important to point out, not for causation issues, but particularly just for duty, is that Mr. Meyer's direction to the plaintiff was not to walk underneath the forks. It's undisputed that he just said balance the stone. It was plaintiff who made the determination to then walk under the forks.
As opposed to how would he have balanced the stone otherwise?
You could walk on the other side. And there is testimony from Mr. Meyer that he had done that previously, that he had balanced the stone from walking under the other side.
And there is evidence that the injury was caused because Mr. Meyer hit the wrong controls.
I believe that is correct. There is evidence, exactly, that the issue.
So that would be, one assumes, within the training of the employer.
It could be very well within the training of the employer. The issue with regards to that particular allegation.
Are you claiming he wasn't trained on how to operate the forklift?
The allegation was that he was not qualified to operate the forklift. That was one of the allegations that were confronted. And the way that we handled that at summary judgment was to say, well, he was trained to operate the forklift. Something wonky happened.
So if he pushed the wrong button, you're saying no method was provided. And I understand your argument as to whether someone should stand in front of the forklift. Their opposing argument is that that's just common sense knowledge, which everyone knows and that's one issue. The second issue is if it was caused by pushing the wrong button when someone's trained to know how to operate the controls, is that something that's, how is the employer's non-delegable duty, to use the vernacular, how can the employer be standing there saying, no, push that button?
Sure.
Or is that the details of the
work? I understand that distinction, and perhaps the reason why that's confused is given the landscape of the law and the fact that we do have Taylor and the other cases that tell us that operation of equipment and machinery is subsumed.
And you don't think Taylor was overruled by Peterson Parr?
I do not. I think that that's still an area of confusion, and that's part and parcel of why we're here. So I do believe that with regards to that particular aspect of the factual dispute at issue here, that there is still a confusion, and I don't think that it's clear with regards to the law. Again, I think that Peterson Parr support the summary judgment in this particular case, and as does Leaper. Again, with regards to this issue of transitory risk and whether the duty existed or not of the co-employee, we need to look to the case law and the common law. Once again, the cases where there is an issue with regards to this, such as Marshall, Logsdon, there's something that occurs that's not within the task at hand or is deviating from the actual safe method that has been established by the employer. Again, with regards to safe use of instrumentalities, it is up to the employer to ensure that that is affected on the job site and not the co-employee. One of the other issues that comes about with our particular facts is with regards to this particular project and building a stone fountain and transporting these 300-pound stones from one location to another, they were dealing with a rough terrain. They were dealing with a machine that everyone testified was jerky. They were dealing with the weight of the stones. And then on top of that, they were dealing with the fact that none of the three that were there had ever done this particular type of work before. I think Evans, out of the Southern District, with regards to that particular forklift case, did apply the law correctly with regards to, again, if you're just negligently operating machinery under Taylor, if that still exists, then you could say that that, in fact, is the employer's duty and it's subsumed within that. I think it's
you say
up to the court
to
assess that.
You say in your brief, it appears that you're arguing the something more test is a valid legal concept after Peters and Parr.
With regards to something more, I think what is established by Peters and Parr by this court is that the something more that would require an affirmative act, something beyond just something that was attendant to the risks at hand, that no longer applies. I think the only thing with regards to something more would be you need something more than just an allegation that it was a violation of the employer's non-delegable duty.
What was said in Peters and Parr was that there is no something more, but that the cases that were applying the something more, some of them applied the correct prior common law test for liability.
That's correct. I would agree with that. I would agree with that assessment. And I think that's how we've handled it in the brief, that if you go to
and
the
so
cases.
And so how did the cases, not Taylor, but the cases before, properly handle a circumstance like this of operating machinery or operating a vehicle?
Certainly. So with regards to the transitory risk, are you asking specifically with regards to operation of machinery and equipment?
You were just saying that you thought that because this dealt with operation machinery, simple negligence
sure.
at operating machinery was not enough.
That's correct. I think if you look to even Fowler, which was out of the Eastern District, though that is more recent, that's not the common law. Again, the issue there was violation of the rules that were set into place by the employer. With regards to common law cases, you have Marshall. It was not an operation of machinery that was at issue in that case. However, the employee's manipulation of the hose was not part of his actual task at hand. It was something that he was doing that was not actually required that then caused the issue. So you also then have burns where you have the issue where the welding is performed on a corroded tank and he says run it to it blows. Again, that is not an example of where you do have the operation of machinery, but you do have a piece of equipment that's being altered or some sort of act that's being done to impair that piece of machinery that then causes the injury.
Was the Marshall case, is that the one where they had the hose and the air compressor, and it wasn't part of the job, but he was just trying to straighten the case
That's
out?
Correct, yes, Your Honor. Yeah. That's correct. And
that
I think
that was an affirmative act that didn't have anything to do with the operation or the details of his job.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
And that was one of the cases that survived.
I believe that's correct.
Cited with approval, right, in Parr?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. With regards to the law after Peters and Parr, again, and even with Leaper, we know that Meyer did not deviate from some sort of safe method of work. It is not the case where he went rogue and did something that was
well, but he was carrying it with two straps and no one walking under the forks, and he switched to one strap and someone walking under the forks, and then he pushed a button and hit the person repeatedly. How is that not a deviation from
how is that not going rogue?
Yeah.
Well, with regards to the allegation that concerns the machinery and the forks coming down, the testimony was they weren't exactly sure how it happened, but certainly I think we can infer there was operator error here. With the extent that there is still case law out there that implies that negligent operation of equipment and machinery is subsumed within the non-delegable duty of the employer.
So you can do anything with the machine and you're not responsible?
Well, see, and again, that's where I think there is an issue here with that, and I think that's
something
that's
in front of this court. And even under Taylor, I mean, we had the case with the elevator where they jerry-rigged a system to hoist somebody down an elevator, and under the something more test, that was negligence, which was actionable against the co-employee. So
sure.
Operating something in a negligent manner can form the basis of an independent duty.
I agree that it can.
Why isn't repeatedly punching the button, crushing your fellow employee, why wouldn't that be a jury question as to whether that fell within that area?
It could be. The undisputed facts are that he lifted his hands up and the forks continued to come down. So I appreciate the point that's being made. There's a little bit of a distinction, though, in so much as I don't want it to seem as though he was sitting there pushing a button okay. And continue to apply the force.
Thank you. I appreciate
to the
that.
Body. But I think certainly that is something that is presented by this case to this court. We would respectfully, therefore, request that the summary judgment be affirmed. There is one case I would like to point out, and I'm not sure if it is referenced within the brief, but it is a very old common law case, Johnson versus American Car Foundry, 259 Southwest 442. In this particular case, the evidence was the employer's worker got into the custom of starting a press without making sure others were ready and that sufficient space was provided. This was a case where it was not sought to impute negligence onto the master by a single incident, but over a course of conduct that had been developed. The reason I bring this particular case up is it stands for the proposition that where the negligence of the master occurs conjointly with that of the servant, the master will be held liable for the injury sustained. Again, I think this particular case is even older than Kelso, which tells us that if the master is at fault even a little bit, it's the master that has the duty. So with regards to this whole idea of duty.
Is that like, I think it's Peters, but whichever it is, where the master had the plan of stacking these baskets and it was the method that was approved by the master and that was intended, then that was subsumed within the non-delegable duty.
That's correct.
As opposed to if the person on the side had said, hey, let's do this in this different way and stack them and had done that negligently, that might have come to a different result.
Perhaps. I think, again, a distinguishing characteristic with regards to our case is that the decision to try it 3-4 different ways throughout the course of a week was not a deviation of a safe method. Mm-hmm. So to the extent if we had a fact situation where there was a safe method and Mr. Meyer made the determination to alter that and go rogue, I think we would have a different situation here. Unfortunately, those are not our facts.
Thank
you for your time.
Case will be, or permit. Thank you for your argument. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you, Congress.
Can you address that last argument? That there was no safe method provided, so you couldn't deviate from it?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. There wasn't a prescription for how to move these stones. But there was a rule that only a trained operator could operate a forklift. What happened that constituted negligence after that was violations of common sense. The employer doesn't have a duty to anticipate this kind of gross deviation from common sense. Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Myers both testified, and Mr. Myers testified that he knew the company expected, that you wouldn't put somebody under the fork in front of a moving forklift, under the fork in a forklift, period. So there isn't a company rule that says, here's how you move these rocks. But counsel and I have a different recollection or different view of the record with regard to the supervision that Mr. Armstrong provided. Mr. Fogarty testified in his deposition that Mr. Armstrong was watching them as they would start their work. He didn't just see the forklift and the straps. He was observing them as they did their work. There's no evidence that he observed them once Mr. Myers had implemented his speed-up methodology that led to the situation where Mr. Myers then told Mr. Fogarty to get under, to walk in front of the forklift under the fork. And we don't know if there was mud that forced Mr. Fogarty at the time of the actual accident to be on the side of the load that he was on. What we know is that Mr. Myers is operating the vehicle and tells him to steady the load, and the only way you can steady the load is to be within arm's length of it. It was muddy terrain. Mr. Myers was having difficulty getting up the terrain, and he called for Mr. Fogarty to come stand there and steady the load. So, with respect to whether there was experience for these three individuals moving stones doing this particular task, What there was evidence of was that moving heavy objects with a forklift on a construction site is commonplace. It's as common as somebody walking past your door. So whether it's stones or whether it's loads of something else that's heavy, getting the forklift and using that to move the heavy objects from one spot to another on the construction site, that's commonplace, according to Mr. Armstrong, who was the site superintendent. With respect to the notion that, in his petition, Mr. Fogarty, among his negligence allegations, alleged that Myers was not trained, the evidence proved that wrong. That's not an operative allegation. That's not part of the summary judgment motion and evidence that was presented to the circuit court and is before this court. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.